Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of Boat Briefing. My name is Stuart Campbell and here to help me navigate through all the news from the world of superyachting is Sophia Wilson.
Hello, welcome back Stu.
Thank you. I'm struggling slightly through a cold at the moment. I managed to pick something up. I've been sniffing and coughing for the last week, but
all we should good. Just clarify also having a lovely holiday with your family just before everyone starts to feel too sorry for you.
That's true. I was just trying to explain the particularly nasal tone of my voice on the podcast. Yeah, I did just have also a lovely skiing holiday with the family, which was fantastic after the very successful Superyacht Design Festival in Cortina, which we'll talk about in just a moment. But before we go any further, since Sophia's amazing track record of recruiting people through this podcast stands at 100% currently, we've mentioned one job on the podcast before, and Charlie joined the sales team as a result. Well, we have another sales job on offer. We have an opening for a sales executive to join Charlie on the sales team. So the blurb says, as part of the boat sales team, the successful candidate will be responsible for looking after an existing book of clients, growing these accounts, in addition to developing new business. You will work towards agreed KPIs and targets and always aim to meet customer needs and exceed customer expectations. But just come and join us and help grow the company, really. I think that's the thrust. Yeah.
I mean, I'm still waiting for my commission from Charlie, so I'm not going to sell this too hard. But no, I think it's a pretty great sales team to be part of. Charlie's just come back from Miami, sporting a sunburn that has only been surpassed by our head of social, Adam, whose sunburn is outrageous.
Yeah, that's off the charts, that sunburn. He's radiating.
But no, all in all, I think it's a fun team to be part of. Lots of international travel, lots of great clients to be working with. So yeah, make sure you apply.
Yeah, do. So if you're out there, you want to join the boat sales team and have lots of adventures and meet lots of wonderful people, do lots of great things, just drop us an email, podcast@boatinternationalmedia.com, and one of the team here will make sure your email gets to the right person. So yeah, come join us. So let's talk about SDF.
Yes, let's. So I know the team covered quite a lot of it last week. Obviously, you had Caroline Cecile on the podcast, but we thought we'd bore about it a little bit longer.
Yeah, I listened to last week's podcast yesterday, actually, in the car. And they did talk a bit about it. But
what were your highlights, Stu?
Well, I liked, they didn't mention Tim Haywood. They neglected to mention the great man, Tim Haywood. So Tim closed the show, basically. He was out the final act on the second day of the show. And he was a joy to be on stage with because he told stories from his amazing career. He chose six boats. He actually reminded me on stage that we originally asked him for five, but he couldn't choose five. So he chose six. So it became Tim Haywood, six of the best. So in order of how he mentioned them on stage, so he kicked off with Polaris, you know, as you'd expect. Mm-hmm. He spoke about Kogo, then Symphony, Mayan Queen, Quantum Blue, and the very first Amels 171, which obviously kickstarted his phenomenally successful run of limited editions boats with Amels. But with each of the boats, he kind of really dug into their histories, how they came to be, his relationship with the clients, some of the quirks of the build, some of his particular, the particularly proud design element, or the design elements of which he was particularly proud. I got my syntax right eventually, on each boat. And it was a fascinating insight because everyone knows these boats, right? They're super, super famous boats, but you don't always know the stories, especially with boats like Polaris and Symphony and others, Quantum Blue, that have typically been pretty private and hard to get to the granular detail of.
I think that's what I always love when I don't get the opportunity that often now to write yacht reports. It's because you do, I mean, obviously the yachts he's talking about are incredible, but I find that any yacht has this incredible backstory behind it, be it an owner's vision or a designer's driven, or, you know, there's so many different elements. And until you really dig into that granular detail, I don't think you fully appreciate what you're seeing on the water.
No, that's exactly right. And yeah, he adds real character and life and verve to these projects. It was brilliant. And everyone was rapt. And the great thing about having someone like Tim closing the show is that everyone sticks around. Because if you have kind of a limp ending, people just kind of cruise off because there's the ski cup and there's social stuff to do and there's coffee to drink and all conversations to be had. But when you've got Tim, everyone's very, very happy to listen to him. And it was really lovely environment in the room because so many of his friends were there. And, you know, he's worked on so many of those boats with Terry as well. And he referenced Terry a bunch and he was sitting right up front. And Michael Bremen from Lursen as well. It was brilliant. It was brilliant. It was an absolute joy. And he got a standing ovation as well because, of course, back in 2021, we couldn't run the Design Festival for obvious reasons. And he was awarded that year the Lifetime Achievement Award at the Design and Innovation Awards, which always kick off the festival. So there was a lovely moment at the end where he finally got his standing ovation from everyone in the room. And it was a great moment.
Very richly deserved, of course. It was always a shame because that was one that got cancelled several times. We kept on hoping there was going to be the opportunity. And then in the end, it wasn't until Milan 2022. And by then, there'd been another BDA. So
yeah,
glad he finally got his moment.
Yeah, he got his moment in the sun eventually. I think it was our best one ever, to be perfectly honest. And you know, you might expect me to say that, but I really do genuinely think it was the best one ever. Marnix delivering his presentation about Project Zero, the big sailing yacht that's in build now at Bitters that doesn't have an engine room or hydrogen or any combustion on board at all. All power will be derived from sun, wind and sail regeneration. Amazing, amazing project. We had the owner of Kensho on stage with his design team talking about that incredibly novel yacht and why it's very different and why he made the decisions he did. And I thought the other thing that really stood out for me was the amount of questions that were asked. After every session, there was almost too many to manage, which always is a good indicator of the health of the content, because if there's lots of questions, then you know you've nailed it with the speakers. So I was very, very happy with how it went. But how about you?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think they obviously mentioned it on the podcast last week, but Cynthia Halley from Marvel was brilliant. She kind of did the keynote at the start of the conference. And I was kind of fortunate enough, she actually flew in from the States the day before and her luggage hadn't arrived and there were various other things that we were kind of frantically trying to sort out behind the scenes. But I went and met her for breakfast the day before. And she just kind of very casually was like, oh, I love being in airports because I kind of sketch as I go, and just passed over this notebook with just these most incredible sketches. And I should premise this by the fact that I literally can't draw a thing.
Same, yeah.
It's really embarrassing. My daughter now asks me to draw things like squirrels and stuff and I can't do it.
I do a great stick man.
Yeah, that's about my limit. So seeing someone with that amount of talent, I know obviously so many of the designers in the industry share that incredible creativity and ability to draw. But yeah, it was just firsthand, and the kind of casual nature of it was amazing. And I thought she translated, you know, she came from such a different industry, and I thought her speech kind of translated really well into the super industry and, you know, how we can be thinking about creativity and what, you know, a lot of it was about the narrative behind what you're creating. So yeah, I thought that was absolutely fascinating. And I'm not even a Marvel fan. I don't think I've even ever watched a Marvel. But yeah, I just thought that amount of talent.
You've never seen one of the 426 Marvel movies that have been released in the last 10 minutes?
No.
You haven't?
No.
Unbelievable.
I probably shouldn't admit that, but no.
My daughter was very impressed.
Yeah.
Because she's watched the animated series that she works on, that she was an art director of. So she was very impressed.
And then I'd say away from the content, it was so great to have the ski cup back.
Yep.
It was the perfect afternoon, blue skies, sunshine, lots of Aperol spritz, and everyone was just on brilliant form. The racing, I think, was pretty competitive as ever, but most people seem to handle success or disappointment in a nice competitive nature. Yeah, it was just really good. One of my highlights was Enrique from Darman gave us all a guided tour back into Cortina on the coach back. He managed to get the microphone off the off the coach driver. But it was just a really fun way. And I think, you know, Milan was brilliant last year and it was wonderful to be there. But it did feel that last day without the ski cup did kind of miss something. So it was the perfect way to be back. But yeah, you've just had a whole week of being on the slopes. Any snow?
Yeah, we were in, actually talking about Enrique. So I we were in, I'm going to say it wrong, Baquera Beret or Baquera Bere. It's in the Pyrenees. It's in the Spanish Pyrenees. Never been there before. Snow was great. Conditions were fantastic. Sun was blazing. It was just gorgeous. So I put something on Instagram and Enrique immediately messaged me saying, that's my favorite ski resort. So obviously he's very familiar with it. Yeah, it was great. It was great. I wiped out, had a big wipeout on the last day. I have no idea what happened. Skiing normally, just going down, then just bang, I'm on my ass. And I'm holding my arm thinking, oh, I've broken something. But thank God I didn't.
Fine. Yeah, you don't seem to be limping.
No, all good. All good. Just a moment of supreme uncoordination. I think just collapsed in a heap. Suddenly my kids are standing over me going, Daddy, you okay?
Well, you obviously carried on for your skiing holiday afterwards.
You went to party with Giorgio Armani.
I went to a party with Giorgio Armani, as one does. I think I should premise this with the party was very kindly hosted by the Italian Sea Group and Armani to unveil their new 72-meter collaboration. But it sort of involved a pretty mad Italian road trip to get there. So I was very kindly driven by Norta's Mario Padol, together with our sales director, Luca. And they are brilliant friends, but also sort of bicker at the same time. Yeah, so
they've been married for 60 years.
So we had this sort of mad trip across Italy. I had hair curlers in because I wasn't going to have any time at the other end. And it was all slightly bizarre, but totally worth it. The most kind of bonkers thing I think I've seen of 8 years in industry. The party was held in one of the Italian Sea Group sheds, and it wasn't initially clear that the yacht was in there. She's not due for delivery until next year, so I wasn't kind of sure what stage the build was at. So they did this big presentation, and then suddenly it became obvious that the yacht was all there all along, and this big light show, and she was sort of revealed behind. And then there was, of course, a fashion show by Giorgio Armani, the spring summer collection, and then he was there as well. And of course, being Italy, then we went on for an incredible kind of four-course dinner in this huge bank. I think they had 650 people sat down for dinner.
Wow.
So yeah, it was truly spectacular. So yeah, a very big thank you to the Italian Sea Group for hosting me. It was a privilege to be there.
It looked amazing. I was just the bits and pieces I saw on social media and obviously the story. It did look bonkers. Bonkers is a great word. So spectacular and over the top and fantastic is, you know, they do it so well, don't they?
When just everything done to the highest level, you know, yeah. You kind of thought, well, maybe they'll have had to, you know, 650 people. We thought, oh, they've had to cut a corner here or a corner there. And they just, nothing. Every detail had been thought out to the point where you left and there was just a kind of fleet of black cars ready to take you to wherever you were staying. It was just superbly done.
So he's designed the interior and exterior.
Yeah, so the exterior has been done in partnership with the Admiral Style Centre, and then the interior will be by Armani Casa.
Okay.
And they've shared some renderings, and it looks beautiful as you'd imagine. Very Excellent. Kind of simplistic, but stunning at the same time.
Well, we've done some features with Armani before on his. He's got a holiday home and a lovely place whose exact location escapes me at the moment. But we did that in the very early stages of the pandemic. And that was in 2020. We did a great feature on one of his beautiful holiday homes. Then we featured Maine, his previous boat, a few years ago as well. Beautiful boat, obviously. Lovely. Interior is just gorgeous.
Yeah, Maine Rebem has got quite a dark interior though, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Whereas the renderings that I've seen for this yacht, it's kind of the complete opposite, very kind of light and airy, and just sort of a few contrasting tones.
Well, that's bang on trend, isn't it?
I mean, so it'll be interesting to see. Yeah, I think, yeah, it's scheduled for delivery early 2024, so hopefully we'll get to see a bit more or even get on board then.
Oh, we definitely will. Yeah, that's an easy cover, that one, isn't it? Alrighty, so let's should we do some of our brokerage picks?
Yeah, so I know you're going to think I've cheated this week.
You've definitely cheated. As soon as I saw your pick, I'm like, come on, it's too easy. Anyway.
Sorry, I'm not sure I got the name of the game. This is the first time you made me need this. So my brokerage pick is, obviously, speaking of Tim Hayward, is 115-meter Lursen Pelorus. She's just come back onto the market with Dominic Millman at Burgess. She was, of course, delivered in 2003 by three of the most distinguished names in yachting. So, of course, Tim Hayward, who we've mentioned, Lursen, and Terence Tisdale. When she was delivered, Can you remember where would you guess she was in terms of the largest yachts in the world when she was delivered, without looking at the script?
Top 10.
So she was 11th in the world when she was delivered.
In 2003?
Yeah.
Okay.
And of course, at the time as well, she was the flagship of the Lursen fleet.
Yeah.
I mean, we spoke, yeah, everyone knows her, but obviously kind of packed with amenities, 4 pools, wellness centre, cinema room, 7 tenders, so take your pick. And she's also got accommodation for 24 guests with dispensation for a total of 36. So plenty of room for all your friends and family, plus a nanny or two, which I think is always advisable. And yeah, asking price of 185 million. But you can't put a price on owning that piece of super yacht history, I don't think.
She's kind of the quintessential super yacht for so many people, isn't she? Mm. She just absolutely nailed it with the proportions, and Terry's interior is classically very, very comfortable and easy on the eye and beautifully textured. And yeah, she's a cracker. 185 million euros. So it's interesting, the other 115 meter on the market recently, Arpo, asking 330 million euros.
Yeah. So we obviously got the exclusive on that. It kind of broke while we were all in Cortina, which added to the excitement a little bit. And I was trying to work out at the time, because she, in my memory, is the most expensive yacht that I've seen publicly listed for sale.
I can't recall a bigger price.
I'm sure there have been bigger yachts sold, but in terms of a kind of public listing price, yeah, certainly the highest that I've seen.
Yeah, I'm not aware of any boat that's ever been listed with a higher declared asking price. I mean, I'm guessing boats have been privately for sale with chunkier asking prices.
So I asked Marilyn at breakfast at SDF, and she very promptly reeled off kind of at least 3 yachts that I hadn't considered. So I then sat quietly in the corner for 5 minutes. But in terms of public listings, yeah.
Yeah. So there you go, 215 meter boats on the market.
Which is going to sell first?
Arpo or Pelorus? To me, I should have chosen Arpo, shouldn't I?
Yeah.
Although I think that was chosen a couple of weeks ago by
someone else playing it easy.
I think Caroline chose it. So I haven't cheated, obviously. I've gone for something a bit more off-piste. And it's a boat. It's not a yacht. It's a boat called Ambria Bella. So she is for sale, looking for a buyer, although I don't think she's with a broker at the moment, as far as I can gather. But I'm just so sold on the romance of this boat and her backstory. So she's 61 years old, 52-meter former passenger ship. She's lying in Trieste at the moment. And she started life as a Vaporetti water bus connecting Trieste, Grado and Venice. So a bunch of interested entrepreneurs, found her after a 9-year search in 2009. They tracked her down using satellite imagery to a small shipyard not far from Piraeus in Greece. She was due to be scrapped when they found her, but the best detail is the fact that they bought her off a professional magician. She was home by a magician. Who obviously hadn't taken very good care of her, because she was due for the wrecker's yards. So she doesn't look great. Like, she's not in good nick, let's be honest. So she was taken up to Trieste and is now looking for an owner. But who doesn't love a project? But there is form. There is form here, because she was delivered with a sister ship, launched at exactly the same time in 1962, known as Dianaea. And she was converted and turned into a luxury yacht earlier in the century. She's now in Genoa, Dianaea, according to Boat Pro, and spent last summer on a rather lovely route through some of the best parts of the Med, Corsica, Sardinia, the Amalfi Coast, and the Aeolian Islands, which remain absolute top of my... I still haven't been there, which irritates me every time I look at a map.
We'll add it to your list of places you haven't been invited at boat.
I just find the Stromboli and Lipari, and I find that just so appealing. I'll get there, don't worry. So anyway, so she's been there, not me.
just really hammer home that point. Yeah.
So there's this opportunity to kind of do the same with Ambria Bella and follow in the footsteps of Dianaea and turn her into a rather lovely, classic-looking luxury yacht. And given the state the pictures suggest she is in, I think you could probably pick her up for an absolute song. But, you know, forewarned is forearmed. I mean, there's a few years of very heavy lifting and a lot of money in front of you if you pick it up.
I was going to say, is this when you start doing your kind of London Builder chat and just putting random numbers out the air, which is normally what you do when you start talking about these projects?
15, I reckon. You got to chuck 15 into it. Well, maybe 10. I have no idea. Seriously, back of the fag packet calculation that. It's always hard to say unless you kind of, you know, I mean, if you're poking your finger through rotting steel, you know, you've got a real, really expensive project on your hands. But so having not actually seen her in the flesh, I don't know. But the pictures don't suggest she's in great nick.
No, I think that's fair to say.
But have a look at the website. We'll put the link in the description as ever. You can see Ambria Bella for yourself. She's very beautiful. Well, you can imagine her being very beautiful.
Yeah, I don't think at the moment you can describe her as very beautiful.
Yeah, but she's very, I love, it's the romance of that look. And mum, love it. Anyway, so a few other things were spotted in our adventures through the superyachting internet. So something was pointed out to me. So Koru, obviously the 127-meter ocean code, the now largest sailing yacht in the world, is on sea trials. And someone pinged me a photo the other day with a close-up of her bowsprit. And not many people have mentioned it or picked it up, but there is a chair. If you look very closely at Koru's bowsprit, there is a rather unusual-looking chair right out on the end of the sprit. And I just thought it was worth mentioning because I've never seen anything quite like that before. It's kind of a weirdly shaped chair too.
I'm not going to add any comment to this because, well, I'm going to add a professional comment, which I think the chair really showcases the vast size of the sailing yacht.
It does,
and
definitely
that, It really demonstrates that for me, and I have no other comment to make about the chair.
Well, it has led to some speculation in the office as to what the chair is
for. Who started that speculation, Stuart?
I'm sure it's just for spotting the wildlife. I mean, because it's not a bad position to be right out there. It'd be a terrifying little walk, although that bowsprit would be quite wide, I imagine. You'd have to be tethered, obviously. But anyway, one of the best seats in the house. But have a look. If you go to the website, have a look at the picture and zoom right in, you'll see this rather strange chair right on the bowsprit of Koru.
I feel like the chair's not going to go away. I feel like it's going to...
Well, it's now in my brain and I'm absolutely fascinated and intrigued. So I must get to the bottom of the story of this chair. So, you know, I'll be in St. Barts in a few weeks. So I'll see some of the Ocean Co guys and some of the designers of the boat. So I'll be peppering them with questions about this bloody chair. Anyway, we've also done a big brokerage review. I know we banged on about 2022's brokerage numbers quite a lot on the podcast. We're not going to dig into any more numbers because we've got more numbers for you later. But what I thought was interesting, I always think it's interesting what the brokers are saying and what they quoted as saying in these pieces. And a couple of the members, senior members of the, very senior members of the brokerage community have contributed to this piece, which was put together by our brokerage editor, Nick Jeffrey. But the top line, as we know, 2021 was a runaway success, wildly successful year on the brokerage market. 2022 was slower, about 20% slower, if you look at the total value of superyachts sold. But it was still, 2022 was still the second best year ever for the market. So 2021, amazing off the charts. 2022, still very, very strong. But what do the brokers say in the piece? So Rupert Nelson, senior partner at Burgess, described 2021 as a very special year. He went on to say, I think 2022 was down mostly due to the lack of inventory and a natural stagnation due to all the yard slots being full and sellers holding on for better prices or not wanting to be without a yacht and or having to pay a premium to move up in size if they sold. Raphael, the newly installed CEO of IOIC, said, meanwhile, Sophia, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, he said, so the sales of secondhand yachts, but also new builds during the first 6 months of the year, closed an increase versus the same period in 2019 and 2020. Harvey then explained that basically there was a slowdown in the second semester of the year. So the market's activity started to slow down as the macro environment imposed more uncertain climate. Even so, yachts were still listed at higher average asking prices and fewer price reductions were announced. The good news is that the industry keeps on growing as the average number of the last 15 years demonstrates. However, he says that he doubts that 2023 will follow 2021 and 2022. Which I think is in line with our predictions.
Yes, it absolutely is. And I don't think there's anyone out there saying 2023 is going to be a rocketing year. I just think there's too many headwinds now. But if it falls in line with 2018, 2019, I think people would be pretty pleased with that.
So yeah, Raphael went on to say, it's anticipated that the market will level itself out and return to pre-pandemic levels of demand and consequently sales in alignment with sort of 2018 figures. He interestingly noticed that 2024 and 2025, though, could see an exciting new influx of listings because obviously the order book is so strong. So there is going to be a huge number of yachts that we're going to see delivered and some really beautiful yachts delivered over the next few years.
I also wonder... There's going to be a glut of deliveries, as he's identified, over the next few years because the order book is just off the charts. And not all of those owners, some of those owners are going to want to get out or sell on immediately because they've enjoyed the process, for instance, or they want to start a new build or whatever it is. So I think he's right. I hope that doesn't dampen prices too much because that's typically what happens in a glut. You know, supply is so strong that it becomes a buyer's market. We'll see. We'll see what happens. But typically when there's a massive uptick in the order book, you see a couple of years later, there is suddenly an awful lot of new-ish product on the market.
We've also got so many new people that are completely new to the industry coming into the market. And they might be new and come in and love it, but they might come in and love it and then decide they want bigger. They might come in and decide actually they've oversized, they want smaller, or they might decide that owning a super yacht isn't for them. I think, sure, Stefan De Vivo during the panel that I hosted at SDF said that 50% of their order book was new, you know, customers that had never owned a super yacht before.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So you've got this huge influx of people that also are new to the industry, so we don't necessarily know how they're going to behave once their yacht's delivered.
I really pray these guys are being really well advised and they've made sound choices, because the worst thing that can happen is, you know, we all celebrate a fantastic order book, but the worst thing that can happen is these people, a constituency of these people, have a bad experience. Then they sell their boats, they bounce out, they never get back in, and then they tell their networks that, you know, this is not an industry to get involved in. That's the worst outcome. I'm sure that won't happen for lots and lots of people. Fingers crossed, because we want all these new people to stay in yachting for the longest time. And all this, you know, 50% of the Fretta Group's order book, you know, you want them, you know, going on to buy 5, 6, 7 more boats in the future or building again, is the ideal, really. Rupert Nelson also predicts a slowdown, he said, over the next 12 months due to uncertainty over the war, inflationary and other economic factors, supply chains and a lack of attractive inventory. And the lack of inventory things, we've heard that a lot, haven't we, over the last 18 months. And it's certainly true. And it is kind of acting as depressant on the market. You know, there's just, I suppose it's why we got so excited when there's great new listings like Arpa and Pelorus. You know, we go to town on them because they're so exciting to see boats that pedigreed coming onto the market.
Yeah, I think the sailing yacht side, from what I've read and speaking to people, that seems to be particularly where the issue is. And again, my understanding is that a lot of sailing yacht sales are happening off the market.
Yeah.
Because there isn't the inventory that's being listed.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true. So if you want to read that piece for yourself again, we'll put that. That's in our kind of the new hybrid boat pro business.
No, that is a Boat Pro Premium piece. So that is exclusively for our Boat Pro subscribers, because it has the full breakdown as well as graphs, etc., showcasing all the data over the last 2 years. So I'm afraid that is, it should be, that is exclusively for our Boat Pro subscribers.
Oh, well, there you go. I've given you a... probably too much of an insight. I get scolded after this, but
don't tell the lovely Heather.
I've given away all the secrets. But the that is one of a number of great pieces that you can find in the premium section of Boat Pro. So check it out today. So we're recording this on Tuesday. I am off to Bermuda tomorrow to join in the World Superyacht Awards judging. So we've got 15 or 16 judges flying in from all over the world to Bermuda today and tomorrow and Thursday. So judging happens on Friday, which is always exciting. Great clutch of boats entered for the awards this year. So I'm really looking forward to it. I haven't been to Bermuda since the America's Cup.
Have you not? Yeah. Obviously, I went last year.
Well, you're there every 10 minutes.
just always in Bermuda. But on the judging, how does it work? I've seen, obviously we've seen videos of stuff and, all the judges sat around a room, but how does it actually work in practice? I don't know how much you're allowed to say.
Yeah, it can be pretty transparent. So that's the joy of it. It is totally transparent. So obviously no staff members, I don't get a vote. I sit in the room. Basically I'm a glorified slide flicker. I sit there and key up the images and flick through the slides and kind of help on that side of things. But the chairman, he leads the conversation. So we go through category by category. And then, there's typically between 4 and kind of 7 or 8 boats in each category. And then most of the boats will have been visited by the judges. And then there's a debate. So each category, we go through each boat. Judges who have seen the boats feed in their views. There's a debate about each boat. And then there's a secret ballot at the end of that conversation, and the results of which are revealed later on. We've got 2 accountants in the room making sure all the numbers stack up. And throughout the day, the results are revealed once all the numbers have been checked and triple checked. And we find out our winners. It's a great process. And then at the very end of the day, there's the vote on the motor yacht and sailing yacht of the year, because they, winners of each category go into an elevated pool, basically. And then from that, the motor yacht and sailing yacht of the year winners are decided.
So I don't think I appreciated that before, that the judges know the winners on the day.
Judges do, yeah. But they're sworn to secrecy, obviously. I think that's the only way to do it. I think the only way to do it is for the judges to find out on the day and to have all the calculations and points shown to them. Because, you just want to remove every possible, not opportunity, but impression that there might be some kind of double dealing behind the scenes and, some influence from the industry or Boat International. Obviously, there isn't. It's an entirely judge-led process. And so by showing, them the results and revealing the winners to them there and then that's all kind of, there's no opportunity for any nefarious activity.
And are all the judges in the room, or do some join virtually?
Most of them are in the room. Some do join virtually on occasion, but some judges, because these are the busiest people in the world, right? So they've got business meetings, or, some can't make it. So those that can't make it are offered the opportunity to submit statements in support of certain boats. It's boats they've seen and physically visited and spoken to the captains or the owners often. They'll say, I was on this boat. These are my thoughts. These are my impressions. And that feeds into the conversation in the room on the day about each boat. But they don't get a vote. So if you're not there, and you can't take part virtually for the entire thing, then you don't get a vote. But you can feed in your thoughts about the boats that you have seen.
And how long does the process normally take?
It's a full day.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a full day. It's a long day.
Yeah.
But it's brilliant because, I'm sitting there in a room surrounded by people with hundreds and hundreds of years of superyacht experience between them. So as much as I think I know, sometimes I'll go in there and go, that boat's dead set. That's an absolute lock, that boat. There's no way that's not going to win that category. And then it might not. And I'm listening to the conversation. I'm thinking, oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I get that. I get that.
Yeah.
I understand. So then my mind has changed by their conversations as well. And I come out the other side thinking that makes total sense why they've made that decision. Because of course they know much more than me. I mean, these people have built, owned, you know, tons of boats between them.
Mm. And spent, you know, we're fortunate that we spend some time on board, but, you know, they've spent huge periods of their lives on board.
Yeah.
Living, working with them, enjoying them, which is kind of a privilege that we sometimes get a little insight into, but not anything like the same level.
No, it's exactly right. Which is why these awards really are different. Because most other awards are judged by journalists, which is fine, which works for them. But I think just having the end user judging these awards does make them that bit more special. So yeah, that's wow. This week. Exciting. Off tomorrow.
Hopefully it'll cure your cold.
Yeah, a bit of Bermuda vitamin D. Should we talk through a few news stories?
Yes.
Do you want to take the first one?
I'll take the first one. So the first story has us that the second hull in Amel's new line of the 60-metre limited edition super yachts has been delivered and christened Entourage. Formerly known as Project Witchcraft, the yacht departed Darman Yachting's shipyard on the 19th of February after completing sea trials. So the yacht is the second limited edition series, which is this new collaboration with Espen Ueno. The first hull in the series we've spoken about extensively before, mainly because I did the yacht report on it, is Come Together. And she obviously has those really distinctive geometric windows, which is a kind of meant to be a signature of the Amel 60. But this yacht has actually been customised. So she has long strips of glazing which allow additional light into the interior. Winch was responsible for the interior of Come Together, but Canadian-based design studio Berta Felix is responsible for this yacht's interior and has used a monochrome colour palette to create a serene onboard ambience. Entourage is powered by IMO Tier 3 compliant hybrid propulsion system, which Darman Yachtings calls the advance guard of a new generation of yachting. So great to have two Amel 60 on the water already, and a load more to follow. I think there's 8 that have been sold now.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
I mean, it's struck gold with those limited edition specs, haven't they? Amel's fantastic. Next up, we have the news that Balietto has launched its 41-metre superfast custom yacht Francesca II from its La Spezia facilities. The superyacht marks the second launch of the year for the yard, and the ceremony was attended by members of the shipyard team and the yacht's owner. Francesco Paskowski was responsible for the yacht's exterior lines, and her interiors are the result of a collaboration between Paskowski and Margherita Casprini. Formerly known as Hull 10242, Francesca II is an all-aluminium build with a triple water jet propulsion system. Triple water jet propulsion, you don't see that very often, so she'll be pretty punchy. She can reach an impressive maximum speed of 33 knots and a cruising speed of 28 knots. This is a unique yacht characterized by a very high level of customization and impressive performance thanks to her triple engines and triple hydrojet propulsion system, said Balietto's CCO Fabio Ometo.
Yeah, she's not very sporty looking, as you'd expect.
Yeah, well, Paskowski does sporty looking better than most people. Yeah. Very, very talented fella.
So last for the news, sad news. A source has confirmed to Bow International that the 49-metre sailing yacht Eleanor E is due to be scrapped following that dreadful collision she had with a 60-metre vessel last summer. So the yacht was left submerged for several weeks in Spain's Port Tarraco following the incident where it was basically a search and rescue vessel that got stuck in reverse and went into it. There's video footage of it.
Is shocking, isn't it? Yeah. Slammed straight into her.
So it was sort of hoped that she'd be saved. So there was a refloating operation that took course over 3 weeks in September, and then she was relocated to a shipyard in Tarragona where it was hoped she'd be salvaged, but the water damaged hull has since been moved to a scrapping facility in Vinaros, and the remains of the yacht are expected to be scrapped in the coming weeks. She was delivered in 2000 by Dutch yard Van de Graaff as a replica of the 1910 schooner Westward. A sad story because when she was hit, it was so dramatic. And then there was this huge refloating effort and it was hoped that she'd be saved, but it now doesn't seem like she's going to be.
Ah, it's a tragedy because she's a gorgeous, gorgeous boat, Eleonore. But, you know, when you get rammed by 60 metres.
But I think there was video as well of the captain kind of sort of desperately trying to bail water out of her. It was completely just wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah, shocker. Shocker. You never like to see that. So last but not least, we have some data for you, which, as ever, is brought to you by our award-winning market intelligence service, Boat Pro. So we're going to have a really quick look this week at the classic yacht fleet, because prompted, actually, by a news story we put up, which generated quite a lot of interest, wasn't it, about the some of the best classic yachts available for sale on the market right now. So just quickly, our definition of a classic yacht is one delivered before 1975. So when you look at the total classic yacht fleet, so of the I did this, I think it's 12,000, because I should know this because it's fresh in my mind from SDF, but in my data presentation, SDF, I think it's 12,900 something in 95, something like that, super yachts in the fleet. So it's almost...
Oh, a total fleet.
In the total fleet, there's almost 13,000 super yachts have been delivered to date.
Right.
So of those, 1,244 are classic yachts. So the classic yacht fleet represents 10.4% of the global fleet. So basically what I'm trying to say is 10.4% of the current fleet was built before 1975, delivered before 1975.
Yes.
So the average LOA of that classic fleet is almost 34 meters. The average GT is 214. There are 926 motor yachts in that fleet and 318 sailing yachts.
Yeah, and we should probably also be clear that in that number, we're counting conversions as well.
Yes, we are. Even conversions that have been converted
yes.
after 1975.
Yes. Yeah, okay. We're still counting in that 10%.
So the average age of the classic fleet of those 1,244 yachts is 71.2 years. So there are 79 classic yachts on the market right now. So 6.35% of the classic fleet is for sale, which actually is probably quite a low number compared to... That's a complete guess. But I'm guessing that's a lower number than you'd find for the general motor and sailing fleets.
Yeah.
I'll check that for you.
I also wonder whether my instinct would be that classic yachts change hands less frequently.
I think that's right. I think there's just fewer buyers for these kinds of
yeah.
boats, aren't there?
But I'm guessing also if you buy a classic yacht, it must be similar to as you were saying earlier, you fall in love with that story and romance. So presumably it's a longer love affair once you've done the work on the yacht or once you've bought the yacht.
Yeah, to keep it not a flipper. So let's have a look at a few of those boats that comprise that 6.35%. Go on, Sophia, you take the largest.
So one of the biggest yachts for sale is Lady Saria, a legendary 76-metre yacht built in 1972 in Italy for New York property developer William Levitt. The yacht is characterised by unmistakable twin funnels with a large swimming pool position between them on the upper deck, and she is asking $14
million. Lovely looking boat. Sailing boat next, one of the most beautiful boats ever, is Shenandoah of Sark. So she was built in 1902 in New York. She's a superb three-masted gaff topsail schooner with a steel hull and twin lugger diesels. She's been well refitted with modern functionality, very high quality, comfortable interior, plus room for 12 crew. One of the most famous of all the classic sailing yachts afloat today, Shenandoah of Sark. She is asking 9.9 million euros.
And then lastly...
This was Caroline's brokerage pick.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, from last week, yeah.
Okay, well, I'll do it quickly then. So it's Asteria. So she's been described by her brokers the ultimate explorer ready for the next adventure. So she was built as a salvage target in 1970 and then converted into a luxury yacht in 2002. And she also underwent a refit in 2019. There's no doubting her explorer credentials because she was actually the winner of the Voyager Award at last year's World Super Yacht Awards. And her owner is quite often very... kindly attends boat events, and I know he has had some incredible adventures on board with his family. So she's a great yacht for that. She's asking $25 million.
Yeah, well proven boat this one. He's a young guy, young family, and they've done some amazing things in her. Been up to the Arctic, all over the place. I won't go on because Caroline's spoke at some length about Asteria because she's a huge fan of this boat in last week's podcast.
I'm always in awe because he says his children don't have iPads.
I know.
This is the level of parenting that I can never.
Well, you just buy this boat.
Yeah.
And you can live the same iPad-free existence. No screens. That's what we scream at our house. Put those screens down. Anyway, you're just a little window into the camera.
Finish off the podcast.
The nightly fight we have with our children to get them off their screens. That brings us to a close. Thank you, Sophia.
Pleasure.
And thank you for listening. This has been a production of Boat International Media. It was mixed and produced by Grace Nielsen. Hope you enjoyed it. And we'll see you next time.